The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome back and to our second day of our intro class, 5-week introduction to mindfulness meditation. And people are still coming in, so maybe a nice way to start to see if any of you have any questions or comments about either the instruction last week or about trying it at home. Maybe some of you meditated at home and you'd like to ask something about it. Take a couple of minutes for questions if you like. Here, Jim, right here, right in front of you.
I practiced at home, and I had some days were better than others.
Did what?
I practiced at home, and some days were better than others. I did notice that my leg didn't go to sleep after the first time, so that was cool. And but some days I was good till the timer went off at 15 minutes. Some days, you know, I don't know if it was sirens outside. I noticed sounds. But sometimes thoughts would kind of overwhelm everything, and I stopped after 5 minutes. But I just tried to not sit in judgment of my practice as it were.
Good.
But just kind of like, okay, so that was 5 minutes. Uh-huh. So
one of the ways, so if you end your sitting after 5 minutes, you intend to sit 15 minutes, then remember this is a noticing practice. So once you've gotten up, go sit in a nice chair, look out a window, and review what happened. See what you can learn about that. Rather than just kind of being driven off your cushion and galloping off, what happened there? What was the forces that impelled you? And that'd be a good thing to do. Thank you.
Thanks.
I think the mic is here. I felt a little anxious.
I don't know if it's on. You have to also have to hold it vertically, horizontally.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
What about now? Okay. I felt a little anxious about the timer. I can't tell why, but I feel I'm subconsciously trying to notice that, and I feel a little distracted by it.
But what way distracted? Feeling worried it's not going to go off?
No, I feel like it's going to interrupt me or something. I'm a little worried about it.
Oh, because you're maybe in some nice place, and it's going to stop you.
No, it's the timer on the iPhone. I use that timer thing. Meditation timer, it's going to ding like that.
And that's going to shock you somehow or stun you?
Yeah, I feel like I'm a little afraid it's going to. Yeah, I'm a little anxious about it.
I see. I wonder if you can find something else. Back in the old days, I had a alarm clock. This is long, long ago. That I would set the alarm clock to ring in 40 minutes. I set it this alarm, right? But I wouldn't turn it on. It would just be set for that time. So when the minute hand came around, instead of ringing, it would go click. So very faint, and that would be, you know, my signal that my period was over. So I don't know if you can find something else then that maybe works better or safer for you, or maybe try not meditating without. I mean, for centuries, people meditated without clocks or iPhones.
I think I was caught by it. Like, I'm not free because of the timer, because I feel probably I'll do better without it.
Yeah, so try. Yeah. It's fine. Try. Okay. And then what happened to me when after a while, my body knew the length of time. And sometimes I would sit for years or 40 minutes, and my body knew when 40 minutes was up.
I was able to practice most days, you know, 5 to 15 minutes, but one day I had a really bad day with a lot of fear. And anxiety, and I just couldn't sit down.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wished for a like a spell to sort of snap, you know. So what do you do? How can one reach sort of, you know? So I needed calming that day, right?
Yeah.
And probably some of this little practice I had done probably helped, but that day I just couldn't.
Yeah. So you know that in 2 weeks we're going to do the instructions for emotions. So having those instructions might be supportive of you, settling you, because you'll know that you know the territory, you know what to do. Last time it was just about the breath, right? So that doesn't really help so much. But sometimes breathing deeply helps. The first time that I ever talked to one of my Zen teachers, my primary Zen teacher, the first kind of one-on-one contact I had with someone, I had a formal interview, and Zen is very formal. And so I met, and I was so nervous that he told me, I couldn't speak, and he told me, Gil, breathe deeply. So I don't know if that would have helped you. Going around the block, talking to a friend, you know, distracting yourself if it's really strong and unproductive to stay that way. There's a number of things you maybe could do. But then wait and ask again in 2 weeks when we do emotions. Next week we do emotions. Okay. And so occasionally meditation is counterindicated. Some people, especially around fear, some people have a lot of fear. And because we're being mindful means you're being aware. If you're aware of your fear, some people get more afraid. And then it can spiral, and people can spiral out. And if occasionally it's not useful to sit and meditate if that's the case. Okay, anything else? Great. Okay. So... one of the important areas of mindfulness is mindfulness of thinking. And we'll do that in some detail in 2 weeks from now. I want to say a few words about it because chances are a fair number of you found that being mindful and being present was hard because your mind drifted off in thought a lot. And it's fairly common for especially people who are new to operate kind of under an old habit of evaluation. And that is that if I'm not accomplishing what I'm supposed to be doing, I'm doing it wrong. And then it can go one step further and say, not only am I doing it wrong, but I can never do it. This is hopeless. And all kinds of kind of habits of thinking come into play to evaluate it. It's best when you do meditation to just put aside any thought about right or wrong, or being successful or unsuccessful. It's kind of like different mystical schools, they talk about states which are outside of time and space that you can attain. For this mindfulness meditation, it's best to think of it as a time and place that's outside of right and wrong, right outside of success and failure. So that, don't worry, just bring your best effort you can, and part of what you have to learn to notice is how you tend to deal with having goals, having ideas of what should happen, how you react and respond. Partly so you can see it and maybe not believe them so much. And begin relaxing around them. They're going to be pulled into them so strongly. But thinking often pulls people away, and so much so some people feel like thinking is their enemy. In this practice we do here, there are no enemies for the purpose of the meditation. It's just something else to notice, and that's the beauty of this. We're not in conflict with anything, and part of the reasons why it's de-stressing and liberating for some people is the way of discovering a way of being, at least during the meditation, where you're not in conflict with what comes up. And people are often living in conflict. They want things to be different. And so there's the art of it. So thinking is part of it. But in order to, we have to come to terms with it and understand it. But one of the things about thinking that helps to understand is how it does some of its tricks. How we get tricked into believing it, as if the thoughts are like, you know, the most important thing, and they should be believed, every thought. And how to decouple ourselves, our experience, from the thinking we have, So we're not only thinking, we're only seeing through the lens of our thinking. So this is the example I like to give. Many years ago, I was watching, I wasn't really a football fan, but I was teaching retreats, meditation retreats, with some teachers who were football fans. It was in the 49ers were doing really well. And so during breaks, during the retreat, everyone else was silent, you know, being very... The teachers would go in the back room and watch these 49er games. And I went along for the ride, right? I was kind of didn't, you know, we were all, you know, stay together with teachers, right? And so I remember sitting there with two other teachers watching the game, and one of the teachers had the remote. So we were watching the game, and then came on the commercial on TV. And so, like a sensible thing, he pushed the remote, the mute, so he wouldn't hear, right? So we talked between us during the commercial. That was nice. Then the game started. And the mindfulness teacher, the guy who's supposed to notice what's going on, did not unmute the TV. But we were watching it, so I thought, well, this guy's mindful, you know. So I'm sure he noticed that there's no sound coming up. And so one of the hallmarks or approaches of this mindfulness approach is kind of default, or kind of the first line of you know, dealing with things, is to get curious. So I noticed that the mute, so rather than poking him, you know, hey, I said, this is interesting. I'm sure he's noticing. He's choosing not to turn the sound on. So let's just notice what this is like. So I watched for a while, and it was kind of interesting to, you know, you kind of see the game. And I didn't know much about football, but I knew enough to know when these guys line up, they fall down. They line up again, and, you know, and some guy gets down the field, and he's running. It feels good for him. You know, he's going the right direction. And then, unfortunately, some guy comes and tackles him, and they fall down, and that play's over. And at some point, my friend did unmute the TV, and what stood out for me was the difference between watching the game with the sound and without the sound. Without the sound, I said, I told you, I could kind of follow the game. You know, it's just lines, and you cross the lines, and that's good. But with the sound, there was the sound of the game, but also the sound of the commentator commenting on the game, whose job description, I think, is partly to get the audience excited. And I could feel myself change emotionally when I started hearing the sound. And then it wasn't just, oh, look, it's nice. The guy's going downfield, he's crossing those lines, and that's too bad he got tackled. It was like I could feel this rush of energy and excitement, you know, when I heard the sound. So what was happening was that, and the commentator and how excited he was, that is not the game. That's something's added on top of it, right? But my experience of the game was tied together with the emotional feeling of the commentator speaking. It's kind of like mood music. Without the mood music, it just looks like a beautiful pastoral path in the woods going off in a nice kind of setting. It just looks like just very, very lovely and peaceful. But then there's the ominous music. And your hair stands on end. You know, it's not just a nice forest anymore. Now it's like dangerous, right? But the music is not the forest. You know, that just added to it. So we live a life often where we have our experience of life, of ourselves, and we add our own mood music. We add our own commentator. And the commentating we make about our experience, and especially if it comes along with the mood music, affects how we experience what we're experiencing. So we don't see it clearly for what it is in and of itself. We see it in a biased way. So something as simple as sitting down to meditate and following your breath, and you notice you can follow two breaths, and then you get lost in thought. So the most simple way of being present for that, recognizing that, is I follow two breaths, and then I got involved in my thoughts for 5 minutes. That's very simple. Or you can notice it, oh, shoot. I only had two breaths. That's nothing. I set myself up to do 100. And then I was off in these thoughts, and I'm just a lousy meditator, and this is, I'm just, you know, I'm just a disgrace. I hope no one noticed that I was lost in thought. That would be really embarrassing. And you can feel the difference, right, between just, oh, I followed two breaths, I went off and thought about something for a while, and then I was back. That's very peaceful. Oh, shoot, I just really blew it. I'm a lousy, no good. I should never do this. I should take up ballroom dancing. That's the way for me. You know, so there's if we're living in the commentary and we believe the commentary and we tend to see the experience through the commentary, we have a very different experience. If the commentary is exaggerated, if it's judgmental, if it's reactive, than it is if it's very simple. And even better if you can not have any commentary at all. It's just a breath. If you have a shallow breath, it's just a shallow breath. If it's a deep breath, it's just a deep breath. As opposed to, you know, if you have a shallow breath, oh no, this is California. I'm supposed to have a deep, relaxed, Esalen kind of breath, you know, and maybe I should do some Rolfing, you know, to really get my breath going. And so in this practice we're doing here, it helps to decouple the commentary. You might not have any success in stopping the commentary, but if you can see it as something distinct and separate, then you won't be as fooled as thinking that the commentary is the thing you're commenting on. Right? So your thoughts often don't make an accurate representation of what the experience is. They add a lot to it. But then we don't see how much we add to it, and we assume we're seeing accurately. But it's not the case. So we're trying to decouple our thinking, our commentary, and just see things very simply and very plainly. Does that make some sense? Okay. So we'll see if this idea helps you when we do this meditation that we're going to do. So in the meditation we're going to do, I'm going to spend probably around 10 minutes with you just doing a very simple meditation like we did last time with the breath, just getting you here, maybe kind of relaxing a little bit from the stresses of the day and just settling in. And then, after about 10 minutes, I'm going to do a little exercise with you, guided attention exercise, to direct your attention to different places. And two things, I'll repeat this later so you don't have to remember, but two things. One is, in this exercise, you want to start studying, noticing, how you use your awareness, how you use your attention, how attention gets used. So, for example, if your mind wanders off, and the task is to be with the breathing, then how you use your awareness is you bring it back to the breath. But some people pounce back to the breath. They jerk the mind back to the breath. They come back with disappointment and despair. Oh no, I have to be, or it's a burden. Oh, I'm supposed to be in that breath. It's so hard. It's just to notice how you are, but also to see if you can use your awareness in a way that's peaceful. So that's the one part of the exercise. The other part of the exercise is going to be about learning how to apply mindfulness, this capacity for attention we have, to be mindful of your body. Being embodied, being connected to your body, knowing how to bring attention into your body is foundational in Buddhism. Buddhism puts a tremendous emphasis on being embodied, being connected to your body. Buddhist spirituality arises out of being connected to yourself through your body. And so last time what we met was mostly mindfulness of breathing, and I'm going to expand today the instruction to include the body, how we do include the body as it. And this exercise will be part of that, stepping stone to that instruction. Okay? So you can take a meditation posture that, if those of you in the outer hall, if you want to be inside, there's a little bit more chairs in here if you want to see or hear better. Taking a comfortable and alert posture. If you're sleepy in the evening, you might want to emphasize the alert part of the posture, sitting up a little bit straighter, a little bit more energy in your spine. And then gently closing your eyes. And then begin by just checking in with yourself in the most generous, open-hearted, open-minded way. Check in and see how you are now. How you are in your body. In your mind. In your heart. It's all okay. Here we are, just this way. And then to help settle in, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Breathing in deeply into the chest. And then exhaling a little bit longer than you normally would as a way of settling in. As you exhale, relax. Breathing in deeply so the front and back rib cages expand and stretch, almost like a massage, so that when you exhale, there's a softening in the shoulders, in the belly. And then letting your breath return to normal. And at the beginning of a meditation, it's often nice to scan your body to see if there's any muscles in your body that might be easy to relax or to soften. So you might start in your forehead and eyes. Remembering not to be concerned or alarmed by anything that you experience, just to be present. And if you can soften and relax, that's good. Softening the jaw. Some people find it helpful if there's tension in the jaw to let the mouth drop open and then gently float the teeth back together. And then maybe the shoulders can be softened, shoulder blade area. The chest. And then the belly. If it's possible to have a soft belly, that's helpful. Letting the belly hang forward. Let gravity pull it forward and down. Some people will loosen their pants or their belts to help that loosening of the belly. And then within the body, as part of the body, noticing how the body experiences breathing. What parts of your body move? What parts of your body feels the alternating sensations of breathing in and breathing out? Noticing where you tend to experience breathing. For some people, it's the movement of the belly. For some people, it's the movements of the chest. For some people, it's the air going in and out through the nostrils and down the back of the neck, throat. And for some people, it's kind of like the whole upper torso somehow, the whole breath body expanding and contracting. And for wherever it's comfortable for you to experience your breathing or most compelling, see if you can make that the home base, your home for your awareness. And in that place, see if you can become aware of how the inhalation is experienced differently than the exhalation. And then staying with that rhythm, breathing in and breathing out. As you exhale, for the next few exhales, see if you can soften, relax your thinking mind. If your thinking is being generated by anxiety, right now everything is okay, right here. Letting the thinking mind settle. Letting go of your thoughts as you exhale. And then for the next few minutes, sit quietly here, attending to your breath. Staying with the breath the best you can. And if the mind wanders off, then smilingly come back to your breathing again when you notice. Whenever you can, just come back. No commentary needed. Feel your breathing. Coming back to your breathing. And then seeing if you can hang out with a series of breaths in a row. Surfing on the breaths. Being massaged by the breaths. Riding on them. and staying with your breathing, and perhaps noticing if you do have any commentary, comments of what's going on. Perhaps decoupling the commentary. Maybe separating yourself from the commentary so you're not believing it so automatically. Coming back to the breath. So then now, the second half of this meditation, I'm going to guide you in a little awareness exercise that uses your awareness, and see if, as I direct your awareness to different places, experiment and see if you can do it in a calm and deliberate way. So first, calmly and deliberately, bring your awareness into your right hand. And feel the sensations of your right hand. Feel the sensations in the palm of your hand. Back of the hand, the fingers, and maybe you feel pulsing, vibration, coolness, warmth, softness, hardness, energy, pressure, contact, heaviness or lightness. And as you feel your sensations of your right hand, see if your awareness can be receptive to those sensations. Let them register, take them in. Feel the fullness of the hand. And then calmly, deliberately, move your awareness to your left hand. And let the sensations there reveal themselves to you. There's no right or wrong sensations. Just notice what happens in your right hand as you bring awareness into it. Into the palm. Into the back of the hand. Into the fingers. And now, calmly and deliberately, bring your awareness to the sensations where your body contacts the chair or your cushion or the floor. And let yourself take in the sensations that are there in that area of contact. Being careful not to get caught up in the commentary about the sensations, but just to feel them for themselves as they are. Maybe in the same way that sensations of your hand became more alive or more aware of more sensations by keeping attention there. See, explore a little bit the sensations in that area where there's contact. Moving the attention around a little bit. Maybe hardness, pressure, weight, pulling, vibration, pulsing, temperature. Letting any commentary you have of what's going on kind of move a little bit to the side. Don't give it so much attention, but let your attention instead take in the sensations of contact for another just a few seconds. And now, calmly and deliberately, move your awareness into that part of your body where you tend to watch your breathing, tend to be aware of breathing, the belly, the chest, the nostrils, wherever it might be, your place. And not so much that you're focusing on the experience of breathing, but just that in that area of your body, infuse it with awareness and become aware of the different sensations that are there. Certainly the sensations of breathing, but anything else that shows itself there. And then one more exercise, that is, now move your awareness into the strongest sensation you have in your body. Whatever the strongest sensation might be, calmly, deliberately, put your attention there. And experiment with just feeling what's there in that area without commentary or reaction, as if it has permission to be there, and for the first time ever it has time in the sun of awareness, just to feel it, get to know it. And notice a little bit if anything begins to shift about it as you pay attention to it. Anything change? Doesn't have to, but notice if it does. And then calmly and deliberately let your attention come back to your breathing. And then to end this sitting, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel connected to your body, And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So one of the principles of mindfulness meditation is to learn how to use our awareness in a way that supports us and is helpful for the process of certainly relaxing, but also to see clearly what is happening and to learn how to be free in relationship to whatever is happening. And what this means is that in this meditation, mindfulness meditation, there are no such thing as distractions. There's only something else to notice. So if you think that your knee pain is preventing you from meditating, then you've misunderstood, you haven't understood these instructions yet. Because rather than letting them the knee pain be a distraction, the knee pain becomes a meditation, becomes where we put our attention and awareness, within limits, but we bring our awareness there. If there's an itch, rather than thinking the itch is a distraction, if only I didn't have this itch, then I could really meditate. The itch becomes the meditation. It becomes where we bring our focus of our attention. The itch is happening in the present moment. We're training ourselves to be mindful of what's happening in the present moment. The itch is just as good as the breath. It might even be better. One of the unsung heroes of meditation or objects of meditation in Southeast Asia, that maybe more meditators have gotten concentrated on this meditation object than any other, is probably the mosquito. And, you know, you're sitting, meditating, minding your own business, and then you hear bzzz. So then you do mindfulness of hearing, rather than say, oh, the sound is getting in my way. No, no, the sound isn't getting in the way. You just do hearing. And then you feel it land. And then you feel it walking around if you're very sensitive. So you're used to, you know, feeling, itching. And then you don't feel anything. And you know what that means. And then you, after a while, you bzzz, it flies off. By the time it flies off, you're right there. You know, you were fantasizing about vacations or something and until the mosquito came along and then, you know, you are really there. And so the idea is, you don't have to look for mosquitoes now, but the idea is anything that happens becomes a meditation. And so there are some kinds of meditations where it's called exclusive meditation, where you choose one object and you want to try to concentrate on that object and push everything else aside, exclude everything else. And and this mindfulness meditation is an inclusive meditation. There's nothing that's pushed aside. So there's no tension between things of the world, because everything then becomes just incorporated in. And that's what I'll do over these weeks, is slowly expand the range of your experience so you understand how this works. But for today, the instructions are about the body. So rather than feeling like the body needs to be the problem, oh, if only it wasn't the body wasn't doing what it's doing, then I could really meditate. If the body sensations are stronger than your ability to stay with the breath, then we let go of the breathing, and we calmly and deliberately bring the attention to that part of the body that has a strong sensation, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, and hang out there with it. So I'd like to hear from some of you, what was your experience like when you kind of brought your attention into these different parts of your body? Were you able to do that? What happened?
Well, what happened to me is my right leg fell asleep really a lot. Uh-huh. And it was kind of ironic because I just said before we started that, my right leg wasn't falling asleep when I was meditating. So that's pretty cool that that happened. When I first noticed it, I was kind of annoyed, and then I remembered what I had said, and then I had to, you know, okay, get over it. Right before you told us to bring our attention back to where our breath was, you said, well, before that you said, find the place where there's contact. Well, I'm all over that, you know, because it was totally numb. And then you said, bring your attention to the place in your body where, you know, something's bothering you or...
Strongest sensation.
Yeah, the strongest sensation, yeah. And when I did that, it actually didn't feel the same. It actually felt more like I was putting something in there that was making it feel different than it felt for the most of the meditation. I didn't change my position. I just kind of stayed with it. But it was just kind of ironic that that happened to me.
So when you brought your attention to it, mm-hmm. that way, intentionally, was it easier to be with?
Yes.
You were no longer struggling with it.
Most of the minute, well, the first half I was okay, but by the second half I was starting to struggle with it. And then, you know, like I said, I went through that kind of mm-hmm. head trip about that I'd said something about it, and now here it is. Okay. And but when I put my attention back into that place where it's the most intense, it did seem to... It didn't go away, but it didn't bother me as much.
Great. Okay, thank you very much. To someone else.
I was trying to pay attention to my fingertips. At first, I didn't feel anything, so I wiggled it a little bit and felt it. And then I tried not moving it. And I noticed I can feel it. I can feel its presence, and I can feel the outline of my finger and a little tingling sensation. And I never paid so much attention to my finger before, and I thought it was really new to me that I can discover these kind of experiences.
Great, this is wonderful. And so the same thing can happen with the breathing. If you make the breathing the primary focus of meditation, you can find the place in your body where the experience of breathing is happening and let the sensations there come alive in the same way as the fingertips came alive.
I think I had a mental image of an ocean wave, like I'm trying to observe my breathing as if it's the ocean wave because every breathing is different. And actually, I felt I enjoyed just observing it, just appreciating part of it, like it as part of nature.
Great. Nice. Yeah. It is nature.
Yeah, I have a comment and a question. I thought it was interesting that you gave the example of watching football with on mute because I felt during this practice and also at home that often I sort of start out feeling as though I'm observing things in my body like a running commentary, like, oh, my nose really itches, my back's kind of stiff, and then at a certain point, there comes what feels like a deeper level of concentration where I'm no longer observing. I'm just sort of sensing the running commentary goes away, and it feels a lot more like I'm in the body sensing it.
Yes, great. So you've been able to decouple the commentary. Even though your commentary was relatively simple, even that drops away. Great.
And then my question, I actually had the same experience that my leg fell asleep, and I was wondering if you had any comments about changing position, because at the time I was sort of thinking, like, that feels like it would be a major break in concentration if I were to change position now, so I'll try and just observe the pins and needles in my legs, but obviously that's not super comfortable. So are there any sort of general guidelines on changing position?
You're always welcome to change it if you feel called on that to do it. Generally, the numbness goes away after a few weeks of regularly meditating for most people. The important thing is that when you break your posture, you massage your feet, if it takes more than 3 or 4 minutes for the sensation to come back, then you're pinching a nerve. It's very rare, but just feel like I needed to say that. If you're not pinching a nerve and it's just the blood that's kind of tingling, then it's fine to stay there and let it be, even if it's slightly uncomfortable or tingly, and you're not going to damage yourself then. And so you're right. You can kind of, if you move your posture, you move your leg, your mind might get a little bit busy. It starts busy, and it takes a while to settle down again, especially if you're getting as quiet as you are. If you do need to move your legs or move your posture in meditation, try to do it as a like Tai Chi. You know, do it as a really slow movement to try to stay connected as a mindfulness exercise so it doesn't take you out of that mode. So I'm curious, a couple of more of you perhaps. So when I asked you to focus on the strongest sensation in your body, were any of you surprised what happened? Someone? Where's the second mic? There's someone over up there who wants next.
So I thought it was really funny when he used an example of an itch, because what had happened with me, usually in my normal everyday life, I'm really good at ignoring itches, but you say focus on your strongest sensation. I'm like, huh, right above my leg is itching. And so I start focusing on it, and suddenly it was like unbearable. It was just itching really badly, and like my leg started spasming because I was thinking about how much it was itching. And I was just like, am I allowed to scratch it?
Sure.
Or do I just sit here and live with it? And
sure,
and then,
both.
So I didn't even know.
Either is fine. It depends what the opportunity is you want to take on. If you just want to relieve yourself as quickly as you can because you're spiraling out to insanity, you know, and you're doing the world a favor by itching it, please do. But there are other opportunities there in staying with it. One of them is that it might be interesting to study, as uncomfortable as it is, the role the mind has in intensifying our reactions and experience. And I think what you described sounded like something that was mind intensified. Your fear, your worry, your reaction. It's very interesting to study that, see how it works. And it, you know, that's one thing. And the other thing that's very helpful to learn is what is our relationship to physical experiences that are uncomfortable to us? And many people haven't really studied that relationship. For it, against it, pushing it away, angry, despairing, trying to run away, avoid it at all costs. And noticing what that relationship is. Many people are almost like slaves to their reactivity to discomfort. And so by studying that and getting interested in it, we can learn how to decouple the emotional reactivity from an experience and be at ease in physical experiences which are uncomfortable. It's actually possible to have profound peace. Also, oddly enough, very strong states of joy at the same time as having intense pain. If we've learned to leave the strong pain completely alone, just as pain, and not tying it up in fears, anxieties, thoughts, all kinds of things. So there's opportunity for you to study that. And maybe just for 5 seconds more than you normally would, you know. Yeah, I'll give it 5 seconds. And then, so if you want to take advantage of that opportunity, you'll probably grow a lot. You probably won't grow a lot if you scratch. I saw, yeah.
When you said to focus on the thing that was bothering or was the sensation, the strongest sensation. My legs were uncomfortable in the position I was in.
Yeah.
And what I did is I went back to a little trick I had when I was a kid, growing up in Canada where it was pretty cold in the winter. And I would just say to myself, it's cold, but this is the new normal. I would just change my frame of reference and say, this is just the way it's going to be. And then take that thought and put it in a box and move it over here. So I thought it was kind of interesting the way you can deal with unpleasantness by just changing your frame of reference.
Yes, or even better, for you know, as you get used to this meditation, you can deal with not by changing the frame of reference, but dropping frames of references, and just being without one. It's just a sensation and without reference to anything. But yeah, that's great. It's a great lesson, and. So maybe one more example of what happened. Okay.
My question was not so much for the deepest sensation, but for the previous one where you asked us to look at our hands or feel our hands. And what felt very strange is that when I diverted my attention to my hands, at one point I lost contact with the idea of whose hand it was. And I found that was very strange. So
yes, that's right. So when our eyes are closed, to know that we have a hand and a clearly demarked hand is based on our memory and our concepts of a hand. In the direct experience with the hands closed, we only have sensations. And we might have some sense of fingertips in some place, but if you really get into it, the sense of boundaries begin to fall away. And people have the experience there's no boundaries. It's just kind of this sensations kind of in space that are doing their thing. And then the concept that it's my hand, it's so obvious and so natural and so, it's like that's the way the universe is built. This is my hand. But that's also an activity of the mind that's operating. And so as people get quieter and quieter in meditation, some of these activities begin to fall away. And it's just sensations without the concepts or anything. And that's where deeper, deeper layers of concentration can arise for people in meditation. Sometimes, when we have perceptions, many of our perceptions are infused with concepts and ideas. But it happens so automatically. There's complicated perceptions, a very complicated process, right? So if you see a door, we see a door. It's obviously a door, right? I mean, it's a door. but there have been, and maybe still, cultures where they've never seen a door. They've never seen a building like this, right? And they come to this big, white, flat thing with lines on the edges and this silver thing that's about a third of the way up or something. And they look at it and they have no concept of what it is. They don't think door. They just see white, flat thing. So the same thing, and so the same thing with us, with all our perceptions. So when we start getting calmer and calmer meditation, the activity of concepts and memories begin to quiet down. And some people find there's a transition time where they're kind of beginning to let up, put down some of the concepts, but then they're kind of not quite giving it up yet. And so the mind is kind of recreating the perceptions in little bit creative ways. And some of them mostly have to do with physical sensations, like suddenly their neck feels really long, or they feel really squat, or they feel, some people will say they feel like about to fly, they have to open their eyes to make sure they're not. Because these sensations are kind of, we're still getting the data in, and the brain is still trying to construct it and put it back together into the concepts we know how to live by. And so it's kind of, for a little while, doesn't last for a long time, but some people have that kind of strange, distorted perceptions of themselves in meditation. So if any of you have that, just be okay. Just you're changing gears, and you're in neutral or something. You're just in transition. Okay, so one more?
Yeah, okay. About that a person who's never seen a door, they see the door and it's just a big white rectangle with a thing, Or that it sounds like you're saying when someone's meditating a lot that they're looser in terms of their definitions. They don't autopilot go into definitions of what things are.
Right.
What it reminds me of is when I took care of a friend of mine who had Alzheimer's for about the last 5 years of her life. I took care of her a lot and she also was like that. It was like she didn't see things the same way. She didn't know what they were. What's the difference between someone's experience with meditation and someone having Alzheimer's?
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry. Said that, I just thought about Rebecca, and I was like right there with her, you know?
No one's going to come back next week now.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Early onset Alzheimer's, meditate.
Yeah.
I think that some of the same things might happen because meditation, the calming effect of meditation is some of our mental functionings don't stop forever, but they calm down, they relax. Mm-hmm. And some of that is just a relief, right? Some of your mental activity you guys do is probably a bit tiring. Some of you know your mind long enough or fed up with some of it. Mm-hmm. And so it calms down, it relaxes, or just stops for a while. Mm-hmm. And so it puts you more in the present moment, because thinking about the past and the future is a mental activity that mm-hmm. takes mental energy. So in that sense, I think a lot of Alzheimer's patients end up sometimes more and more in the present moment too, because yeah. they're not involved in that activity. So I certainly can see similarities. What happens with meditators is that as we begin to relax these concepts that we often are frozen in our lives, they're concepts about ourselves. I am this way, I have to be this way, concepts about other people, what we need, what has to happen. As we begin to relax, they're often kind of frozen into the hardwire almost of our mental functioning. Meditation begins to loosen it up. And if we can, and especially if you can get quiet enough and put that activity to rest, then it's really kind of loosened up enough. So when it returns, it will return. You will think about the future and the past again. You're not going to stay an Alzheimer patient. But when you come back, your mental functioning is going to be more fluid and more flexible. And you're less likely to get stuck in your old concepts and ideas again. And so you might pick some of them back up, but you're not going to be so identified with them. Make some sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. So mindfulness of the body is a very important part of what we do. In the meditation practice that I'm teaching you, we use the breathing as the home base, the place to be home, the place to come back, the default, and to cultivate concentration, mindfulness on the experience of breathing, trying to stay there with the breath as much as we can. The mind wanders off and you come back. However, if some other strong experience arises that starts setting up a tension between your ability to stay with the breath and this other thing that's calling your attention, then the instructions is to let go of the breath and bring your attention to that other thing. So, for example, if there's a loud sound, and your neighbor's dog is barking, rather than saying, you know, I shouldn't meditate now, I can't meditate with that distraction, what you do is you let go of the breath and you make the barking the object of meditation. Just, it's happening in the present moment, and you just turn your attention and listen to the barking. Take it in, really feel what that experience is like. Notice your reaction to it. Try to see if you can be very simple. Put a commentary aside and just hear it. And then when it no longer seems so compelling, then you can go back to your breath, if you can stay with your breath. If there's a strong body sensation that arises and it's compelling enough that it's hard to stay with your breathing, then the instructions is let go of the breath and then calmly and deliberately place your awareness into that part of your body where that strong sensation is there. And then see if you can just hang with it, hang out there, being mindful, cultivate your awareness there. If the mind wanders off, then bring it back there. If the mind starts making commentary and reactions to it, see if you can decouple the experience of the sensation from your reaction and your commentary and your judgments about it or about yourself, and just try to see it very simply for itself. Sometimes if it's really strong, the sensation, maybe you want to do it just in small little periods of time, just 5-10 seconds. If you know it's 5-10 seconds, maybe it's manageable to explore, to be with it, see if you can experiment what it's like just to be with it in and of itself. And then if it's really strong, you could change your posture if you want, or you might just stay and hang out with it, get to know it. And the exercise with the hand was supposed to give you a sense of how to try to wake up the sensations of that part, really kind of be sensitive, a heightened sensitivity to what's going on there, to in and of itself, as opposed to what you think about it. And your thoughts, oh, this is going to lead to whatever. The mind has an amazing capacity to live in its commentary and believe it and think that's where life is at. I'm sitting here and I'm trying to stay with my breath. I can stay with half a breath. My mind wanders off. Come back, 3/4 breath. My mind wanders off. Back to a quarter breath only, my mind wanders off. And then my mind goes, I'm having a hard time. I'm a lousy meditator. Probably this is not for me because I can never succeed in the things I want to do in my life. And, you know, and just like when people are coming here, my roommate left a pile of dishes in their sink and they never clean their dishes for me and I always choose the wrong roommates. I'm such a poor judge of people and character. And, you know, it's ever been since I was a kid because my parents didn't teach me how to, you know, be with people, socialize probably. I had these parents who was just a disaster and they really messed me up. And I really need to go to therapy, but I can't afford therapy. It's part of my problem. I'm such a loser. And I've heard that meditation really helps and it's free. But wait a minute. I am meditating. You know, the mind goes off on these, you know. And so we're partly training ourselves, we're training ourselves to not wander off so far and come closer in to the present moment to stay in. So when you're new to meditation, you wander further, perhaps. And slowly you wander less and less until you find yourself able to stay more here. As you stay more here, you'll be able to see what's going on here more better. And then you can learn how to be at peace with what's here and to look deeply into it, what's happening. So that happens, you know, a strong sensation in your body, that becomes the meditation. And see, can you be at peace with that? Can you kind of bring careful attention to it, see what goes on? Some people find that if you bring careful attention to a strong sensation, it shifts and changes. Sometimes it goes away, sometimes it lessens, sometimes it morphs and changes into something else. In the mindfulness meditation, we just follow those changes. When it's no longer compelling, then you can come back to the breathing. Now, since I'm talking about a strong sensation, if it does feel painful, and you always know that you're always welcome to change your posture. But why don't you give it the 5 seconds, 10 seconds, to explore the opportunity to get to know yourself better and the situation better. And slowly you'll be able to decouple your normal maybe habits of reactivity and fear and concerns and identifications, and it's all about me, this says something about me. It's just pain, just a strong sensation. Same thing for pleasant sensations. Meditation can give birth to very wonderful pleasant sensations, and quite strong feelings of ecstasy that can course through the body. In doing mindfulness meditation, we don't then say, oh, I'm the best meditator, this is great, I can't wait to tell my friends, and, you know. The idea is just stay with a strong sensation if it's pleasant, and let it be pleasant, be very simple. And slowly what happens over time, what needs attention in our body shows itself. And the body or the mind or something inside has a lot of wisdom that what needs to be attended to will show itself. There's one school of our similar to does Vipassana practice like ours, that does this. That focuses primarily on body meditation, mindfulness of the body, but they do it with a systematic body scan. They go through the body systematically, which is a very concentrating practice. It's a nice thing to do. In our practice, we don't do it systematically. Just we stay with our breath, and then something in the body calls attention to itself. We go there. We go back to the breath. Another part calls attention to it. We go there. Come back to the breathing. Something else sooner or later. And we trust that overall, over long term, that what begins to show itself to the body is what needs attention. There's a lot that goes on in our body. A lot of holding patterns. A lot of our psychology is held in our body. A lot of our life history is held in the body. And it's kind of a healing thing to do, to learn to bring this careful attention to whatever in the body wants attention at any given time. And to bring attention, which is very simple. If it's not simple, it's not mindfulness. If you're analyzing and engineering it and making it a big project, it's not mindfulness. Does that make sense? So any questions about that? Yes?
How long do you suggest someone meditate in a day?
I think when people are doing this intro, what I suggest is they do what they like, what works for their lives. But generally, if you really want to get into it over time, probably it should be on a regular basis, at least half an hour. And then after you've done that for some time, experiment with more, like for a week, do 45 or 40 minutes, and then see if that is nice for you and it works for the kind of life you have. If not, then go back to half an hour. Some people find 20 minutes makes a big difference. In the handouts that I give on this class, I suggested last week you start with 15 minutes And then every week for the next few weeks, add 5 minutes. And then after the end of the course, you can decide what your length was right for you and your life. So so there's also a little aid for this mindfulness practice that's called mental noting or labeling. And that is, it's to use a thought to help you stay present rather than have your thinking mind be idle, because an idle mind will get in trouble. Will go off into whatever, right? And so the very simple thought is a one-word thought that names, labels, whatever it is you're paying attention to. So if you're paying attention to your breathing, you would maybe say in as you breathe in and out as you breathe out. It's a very soft little whisper in the mind, so the thinking mind has something to do. It's a little bit insecure. It needs to know that it's still needed. And then it also encourages you to stay right there with the breath, in, out. If there's an itch, you would say itch. Maybe say it repeatedly, just to kind of, as long as you stay there, kind of like encouraging, stay there. It's like a little cheerleader. Stay there, feel it. And then if there is some nice warmth, just warmth. Or there's a sound, maybe sound, or hearing. So you can kind of just encourage you to stay present. It's kind of like a little anchor that keeps you there. So you can feel it more fully. So you're not less likely to wander off into thought or something else. Make some sense? So if that all is clear enough, some of this is repeated in the handout. What I'd like to do is to do another meditation. So is that okay, or you have questions you want to ask? Okay, so, but you've been sitting for a long time, so please stand for just a minute and stretch and one of the things I'll do in this guided meditation is to teach you a little bit about mindfulness of sound, listening. The primary meditation focus that I encourage you to use is the breathing. Occasionally it's useful not to use breathing, but rather use something else. Some people find that breath, for some reason, doesn't work. They have some history with breathing, they have asthma or something, and it's not really the best object for their meditation. And then an alternative is to do sounds. And because sounds we don't interfere with, they just happen on their own, they're more neutral than for some people in the breath. And so it makes a nice kind of alternative home base for the attention. And then the mind wanders off, you come back to the sound. Something else more compelling happens in the body, you let go of the sound and go to that sensation in the body. But even for people who primarily stay with the breath, which I encourage, some time to time, a sound becomes loud enough, becomes a compelling object. And rather than taking it as a distraction, we calmly, deliberately bring attention to the sound and do listening meditation. And this is part of the making the point that there are no distractions for this meditation. It's just something else to notice. So I'm going to do a little guided meditation with you and then open you up to the sounds and you can see what that's like. So taking a comfortable, alert posture and gently closing your eyes. Taking a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. Connecting to yourself on the in-breath. Relaxing on the exhale. And then letting your breath return to normal. And take a few moments to see now if there's any places in your body you can soften, relax. The face or the shoulders or the belly. Yourself sit here quietly with your breathing. Breathing in, breathing out. And then now bring your attention into the center of your head. The area kind of between your ears, under your skull. And just feel what is there. Maybe you feel nothing, it's okay. Just hold your attention there a little bit. Maybe you feel energy or pressure or tension. Inside your head. And then as you exhale, as if your brain is a muscle, see if you can let it relax. And as your brain relaxes, open your awareness to hearing. And allow yourself to be aware of whatever sounds arise. See if you can relax any straining to listen. Let go of straining and let go of thoughts in favor of being open to hear whatever might come. You don't control the sounds. They arise in their own time, in their own way. Sound of my voice. rather than you reaching out for the sounds, let the sounds come to you. And then in the last couple of minutes of this sitting, you can continue with the sounds if you'd like to meditate on that, or you can return to your breathing. But if a loud sound arises that's compelling, you can let go of your breath and be aware of the sound while it's there. And then to end this sitting, see if you can decouple yourself from whatever thoughts you have, so you can sit here for a moment, peacefully accepting yourself as you are. Here you are, breathing, living person. And for a few moments, in the present moment, see if you can be okay with how things are. Just breathing. And then to end the sitting, take some few long, deep breaths, feeling your body, feeling the chair, the cushion. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. There is this handout with some instructions and some exercises you can do at home. I hope you can try these at home, the mindfulness of the body, and explore your body, bring more mindfulness attention to your body this week. And part of the reason for that is that the more familiar you can be with your body, the more you're connected to your bodily experience and learn how to be mindful of it, the easier it is to do the instructions for how to include emotions as part of the practice. Not everyone realizes how closely tied emotions are to the body. It's actually harder to be wisely attentive and process our emotions if we're disconnected from our body than it is if we are connected. So, well, I know some of you have strong emotions that you're dealing with, and that's, you know, a normal part of life. And then hopefully next week some of these will be meaningful for you. Some of you, I don't know if I said this last week, but the talks are recorded. So especially like if you miss a talk, you could listen to it on, we have a website called audiodharma.org, and they're posted there. And also previous courses like this are posted there. So if you miss a week and you want to kind of, you can, you know, follow that way as well. And then there are four people here this evening who, after we finish, if you want to stay and ask, you can ask me questions if you'd like, but those four are probably happy to answer questions as well. Diana and Jim sitting here in the front, they offered to, Richard, you don't care, do you? So you guys are good friends. And they offered to, especially if you want to talk about posture, like those of you sitting in a chair or the floor, if you want to talk about some issues around how to sit, they're happy to talk to you. And then Jim is still out there. There he is. And Jim, so don't just stand, people see you. So Jim, he's also, you can ask him questions. He has lots of experience. And then you also, Xinquan? So why don't you stand, people see you, Xinquan. So Xinquan also has lots of experience and is happy to talk to you and about questions and all this. So thank you, and I hope that your meditations at home are simple and satisfying.